Hey, everybody, it's Zach. This is the Like a New Day podcast, a podcast where we talk about photography, creativity, and Leica cameras. This is the second episode of a two-part interview I did with David Bickley. David is a sweet guy, a creative guy, and just a real inspiration and somebody that I think if you haven't listened to the first episode, you should. But this is an individual that you want to get to know. So David is a Leica DC boutique employee. He's a staff member there. He's also a Leica Academy instructor, and he's a Leica ambassador. So he's got a very interesting point of view on photography. And also being an educator, he's got an excellent point of view on, helping you on your creative and photographic journey. So he and I talk a lot about We talk about style and specialization. We talk about the power of creativity. We talk about imagination and how it separates us from all the other living beings here on Earth. It's a far and wide conversation. And I chopped this thing down a little bit because, like many of these, I listened back to it and I thought, boy, Zach, you really need to shut up and let your guest talk more. So I took out a few big chunks of me blabbing about my own story. I think it came out okay. So I'm working on it, guys. I'm getting better at this. But I will say that this is not, in my nature to do this. I'm kind of a talker myself. So finding that stride of prompting my guest and then finding ways to step back and really let them shine and tell their story. I don't know. It's new to me. So I'm enjoying it. I'm really enjoying the process of meeting people and doing this. I've talked to some incredible people. I just got done with my conversation with Ben Horn, who's a YouTuber that I've admired for a long time. That's a large format photographer. He does amazing work, and he's just a great and sweet guy. And I really enjoyed my conversation with him. And I wouldn't have had that conversation if this podcast didn't exist. So that's kind of my motivation moving forward. I am going to do more straight out of the camera episodes. The response to that one was great. I really appreciated it because I was very uncertain about putting that episode out there, but I've gotten more feedback and communication from listeners because of that episode than just about any other one. So, so far, so good. So I've got another one I'm going to put together pretty soon because we have a lot of Leica stuff to talk about. These last few episodes have mostly been about other people and photography and creativity, and that's great. But there are definitely some bread and butter Leica things that we should talk about. The SL2S and the Q2 monochrome in particular, especially for my fellow, EVF Leica guys like me. So, I'm not going to blab on too long. We're about 3 minutes into this intro. I'm going to actually step back here because I want to get this interview with David on the record for you. And I think you're all going to enjoy it. I think you're all going to enjoy hearing, all these little details of what David has to say. And I found a lot of things in here that really motivated me. This was recorded, a few weeks back, and it's really motivated me in my creative process over these last few weeks. So David, if you're listening, thanks a lot for your insight. Thanks a lot for your time. And thanks a lot for what you've done for me. And I hope that each and every one of you on the listener side of things thinks of the Leica DC store and of David in particular for all of your Leica needs. Because this man has only your best interests at heart. His final statement in this interview, I won't ruin it for you, but really it's just, it kind of goes to show you that, his main motivation is to make sure that you're happy and that you are removing barriers to your creative journey, which I think is just fantastic. So without any further delay, let's get in there and hear what David has to say.
I try and be compassionate about this, but I get a little bent out of shape when people tell themselves that they aren't very creative, because I understand creativity as a practice and a craft. I don't understand it as a gift that some people have. And sure, some people get a bit of a head start on something, but there's a quote that says there's nothing more common than unrealized genius. And I agree with that. I agree with that completely, because I've seen in my own life what hard work and dedication can do to surpass someone that's just kind of good out of the gate. Like, it's incredible. And most of the time, that the people that it comes really easy to, they don't do the work. They don't do the blood on the pavement kind of stuff that it takes to really become incredible at a craft. Mm-hmm. And so I really, like, anytime I talk to somebody about this kind of work, I try and dispel those illusions, because it's just, at least as far as I understand the practice of being creative, it just isn't true.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we are all capable of this. There are studies that have shown that children up to, I think, what is it, grade 2 or something like that. And this is arbitrary quotes. I am not certain that this information is, like, accurate.
It's the thought that counts.
I mean, fact check me, right. But like, it's the thought that counts. But basically, the summary of this study was that up until a certain age, 100% of children self-identify as artistic and creative. And by the time they reach high school, by the time they've graduated high school, that percentage drops from 100 to underneath 10.
Mm-hmm.
That's so tragic to me, because we, especially here in America, we live in a culture that looks at artists as like the starving artist. Like, you have to starve in order to be able to make pretty things. That's not true.
Not at all.
Like, how can that possibly be true?
Mm-hmm.
And so many people buy into that lie to the detriment of themselves. They sit saying, oh, I wish I could play the piano, but I'm just not talented like that. Well, okay. But what if you spent 5 years learning,
right,
and practicing and, you know, using that currency that we all have, the only currency that we all have of time, and investing it into the thing that's going to get you closer to where you want to go? I was a terrible photographer for the first 5 years. I still have a lot to learn. That's why I love teaching. Every single time I teach, I learn something. But if I were to sit there and say, oh, it's just beyond my reach, where I would never get anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, preach. I totally agree with you. The, you know, No kidding. Well, my undergraduate degree is in art and studio art and drawing, particular was my discipline. And, I used to say that, like, the reason that I did academic drawing was that I just felt like I didn't have a lot to say as an artist. You know, I was, you know, there's painters and stuff in the next hall, and they're trying to do things that are far more expressive, or they're, you know, really abstract or things, and it's just coming straight from their imagination. And, you know, I've never really been able to draw or paint like that. I've never been able to create art like that. But it's not because of the older that I get, and the kind of the prism of looking through, you know, my life and my history. It's not that I'm not creative. I mean, you know, my son right now, it's just interesting. This is very timely, because, you know, he's been coming up from he took over this little space in our basement, and he's been coming up saying, Dad, I found all these drawings. He found this huge case where I had all these rolled up drawings and stuff. And he's like, these are amazing. And I'm not patting myself on the back, but he's looking at these. He's like, this is unbelievable. Like, you did all this stuff. And so I kind of started telling him about them and showing him. And then I look at him now, 25 years later, and I'm like, you know, actually that's pretty good. Like, if I saw that, I would be happy with that. But at the time, I was just like, you know, I was just comparing myself against everybody else around me, and I was just constantly down. And I'm still like that with photography now, but I need to get over it. And it's really hard, because the you know, the currency of likes, you know, makes you feel like, well, geez, I put all that effort into that, and not very many people liked it on Instagram. Well, you know, Mark Zuckerberg's algorithm shouldn't define our worth as human beings. Like, whatever it takes. Not. It's like, well, you know, my content wasn't what the scroungers on the algorithm were looking for that day, you know, or whatever. It's just, it doesn't matter. It's like, if it brings me joy, that's what I'm starting to, like, I really need to work hard on defining success as something that, a photo that brings me joy. That's not an easy thing to just be like, okay, that's going to be the thing now. You're still going to have those creeping demons all the time saying, like, well, why didn't anybody like my pictures this week? You know, but, and then you're going to, you know, you're going to put out a picture, or you're going to take a picture that's just lame. And, I don't know. And people will like that one, and you'll be like, well, they don't know what they're talking about.
It's a great mystery of things, man. Yes. Some of my least favorite photos are some of the ones that have gotten the most attention. And I'm just like, really, y'all?
Yeah.
Like, don't you see the brilliance of this other thing over here? You like this POS? Come on.
Yeah.
But like,
photo editing is a whole different thing. You know, when somebody else looks at it, they talk in the Avedon book and one other one I just read, they were talking about John Sharkovsky at the Museum of Modern Art and like what he liked and didn't like. And it was always just like the photographers would always just be like, I don't understand. Like, that's what they want to show, is just those 7 pictures. That's what he wants to show. Like, those are, you know, I couldn't even find the negatives for those. So.
Yeah, I think that's really important to remember too, is that all art is subjective.
Mm-hmm.
And things are only great because people have called them great. Like, who decides? I mean, who decides, right? Like, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. And yeah, of course, it feels good when you get, you know, buckets of likes on something, or when someone hires you on a big contract, or you see your work on a billboard, it never gets old. It's also a trap.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's always two sides to these things. There's the lovely side that feels wonderful, and there's the other side where it's all consuming, and then you have to do more, make more, and so on and so forth. And that's a slippery slope. I think, you know, what you were talking about letting this be something that you enjoy, and also letting it be something that you're able to give to other people freely.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, sure, like if someone wants to charge, that's not really what I mean by freely, but I mean like without reservation.
Yes.
That we have a thing that we can contribute to just people's lives, to people's well-being, to the level of joy that they have. And it took me a while too to get to that place where I wasn't, I mean, that's so much of why I went the direction that I did with the camera, is I was at a place in my life where I was tired of this being the thing that fed me. I don't think the muse really appreciates being the source of, you know, my income.
Mm-hmm.
Creativity on demand is incredibly difficult.
Oh yeah.
But it's also how I came to understand it as a process and a craft. Like, again, two sides to the whole thing. But yeah, I mean, being able to just say, here, come to my front yard and let me give you the kind of photo that you can't get on your own. Like, yeah, you could shoot it with your iPhone, but so? Like, here's this too. Use them both. That's great. There's nothing wrong with letting it have that place too. In fact, to me, I think that's more important. Mm-hmm. Like, I love photography as an art form, as a visual medium. I think it's a beautiful thing. It, for me, I love how much it encourages me to be 100% present in the world that's going on around me at any given moment, because we're about capturing moments. If I'm not paying attention to the moments, I'm not going to be very good at that. And I'm happy to bring those skills and that experience to bear when someone else has something that they don't know how to say visually. That's the sweet spot for me. I've also decided that as a storytelling medium, for me personally, it leaves a little bit to be desired. That's why I decided that I wanted to take all of what I understand about art and try and learn a new language through music, because there's so many parallels. There's so many points of intersection between these two things where, you know, we're talking about a way of communicating how we interpret the world around us. To me, that's what art is. Like, yeah, I mean, we could think about it as like, oh, true originality and all that stuff, but I don't really actually think such a thing exists. Like, we connect dots. We create by taking a piece of one thing and a piece of another thing and putting them together and smashing them up and seeing what we get. And often we don't realize that's what we're doing, but like, no musician has ever come up with an original song that's not influenced by something else. No photographer has ever taken a picture that's not influenced by the styles of another person. It's just, even when you don't realize that you're absorbing things, you're absorbing things. Given that you're formally trained in art, you've probably heard the term visual library, mm-hmm. right? Like and for everyone listening, what I mean by visual library is sort of like the catalog of stuff in your mind that's what you've seen for the time that you've been alive. And some of those things will stay more prevalent than others, and some people will actually keep like a physical visual library of maybe magazine clippings or whatever, just pieces that they found inspiring that they really want to hold on to. But whether it's deliberate or not, that practice is always happening, right? Like, you're always just drawing in like a sponge everything around you. And the craft here is really just getting technically skilled enough to be able to execute what it is you imagine, because no one is devoid of imagination. Like, none of us. I don't even know where to go from that point, because like, I've never found the edges of my own mind. Mm-hmm. I've never come to that border. There's always something else in there. There's always some other thought. I mean, you just think about like the stories that we all ruminate on when we imagine that someone is talking, you know, talking about us in a way that we don't like. We'll come up with the whole narrative out of the thin blue sky, right? And we take that as truth, but it's all imaginary. The imagination is incredibly powerful. I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know where I'm going with that, but like, yeah. I think I think it really matters to start using this innate gift that we humans have. We are the only beings on the planet that can take the stuff that doesn't exist yet, the things in imagination, this space where ideas exist, and bring them to bear in reality. Nothing else on the planet that I'm aware of can do that. Why wouldn't we spend all the time that we have learning how to do that better? Look at what we've made. We've made spaceships.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It is crazy. You know, and I would say, you know, with the exception of politics right now, I don't know that I've found the limits of my own mind either. But, you know, that's, well, politics are getting me pretty close to the limits of my own mind. But
well, the limits of what a person can bear
are different than they imagine. You know, but, well, this is an interesting transition into kind of what, you know, we really kind of wanted to hit on before we wrap it up was I wanted to talk a little bit about style and specialty. I mean, looking at your portfolio that you have online in particular, I mean, it's funny when you talk about visual library, because I look at it and like art history is rolling through my head. I mean, I see like David Hockney, you know, painters like that. You see, you know, some kind of pop art stuff in there. Definitely, obviously, a lot of things that you see in fashion photography that have a lot of parallels, of course, to fitness photography. But, you know, we had this conversation, you know, a friend of mine and I talking about photography, the sort of the difference or the difference between specialty and style, because, you know, I know offline I had mentioned this story to you, but it had to do with Instagram. And I had gone through this process, kind of this currency of likes thing recently, where about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, I was like, well, I should see, you know, I've got more people visiting my Instagram account now because of this podcast. And every day I'll get a few new people that are finding me by looking me up directly, because I mention it a lot on here. And that's just because I want to connect with people and I want to see their work. It inspires more conversation. But I thought, well, is what they're finding when they come to my page what they're expecting to see? I'm like, all right, well, I'm gonna try to be really Instagrammy. And so I took a huge collection of photos that are all like field photos of volunteers working in these pretty rough conditions for months. I've got thousands of these photos, and I put them in there. And in Hootsuite, you can just program like a month worth of photos and then you can forget about it. And I just realized that it really wasn't bringing me any joy at all. Like when I'd look at my Instagram feed, it was like, oh, okay, well, here's like, you know, there's 30 pictures in a row where they're all green with somebody in a red shirt that's picking up trash, you know, or whatever. They just kind of all really started to look the same to me. And it sort of sucked some of the joy out of a few of those that I really like, if that makes sense. Like looking at them as a whole altogether, I was like, well, this isn't why I took these photos. This is not what they were for. And this is not what, you know, like cheap Instagrammers are doing. You know, they're color grading a bunch of different photos that are all taken out of context so that they all look the same. And so you start talking about style, you know, your eye, the way that you like things to look, the color, the way that you execute, but then also specialty, because like on an Instagram platform, you can have really consistent style, but if your content is all over the place, you're not likely to get traction there. And this, again, this is not at all about trying to get traction on Instagram. It's just, it's sort of calling attention to the point that no matter how talented you are, and you have got incredible style, in that context, if you don't have some sort of content specialty, your chances of growing are less. You know, look at some really famous photographers like Pete Van Actemel, who's a magnum photographer and has done photojournalism, but, you know, with this very expressive bent, he's got incredible style and all that. But it's like his following on Instagram is almost pathetically small, outsized to like how important a photographer he actually is. And if you look at the work, you're just like, holy smokes, this is really, really good stuff. But it's like, he's all over the place. And then he'll also throw in like a picture of his dog, you know, or whatever. It's like his Instagram is just a way for him to share pictures he took that day that he likes. And I was like, that's more how I want to be, you know, in that particular context. But digressing from talking about social media a little bit, obviously, like you have, at least in this portfolio and the things that are shown online, you have obviously both incredible style and also, you know, this specialization of work there. And that's not not including, you know, some of the personal projects that you have on here, which have a different look to them. I don't know if those, I don't know if Imprisoned or Between Brothers, are those shot on film?
No.
They're not. No, they just are, they have a digital. They've got a filmic look, you know, however you process those and put them up, they look great. You know, they're good. I just wasn't sure. But they obviously look a lot different than like your more commercial work in that. So I don't know. You know, I don't have a particular question, but I thought maybe we could just explore a little bit the concept of specializing as a photographer. And I guess whether or not that's something that, that is something that photographers should be aware of, especially if they're not quote unquote professional, as we have discussed it. And then maybe thinking a little bit about style. If you had to pick one or two of those, which would they be? Maybe that'd be a good place to start.
Well, I think we can touch on them both. Specialization really kind of just boils down to what you want to get out of your photography. If you're trying to build a business, then having a niche is, we all know, and especially in like the advertising world, like the ADs, the art directors, the creative directors, they all know that you can probably shoot anything they put in front of you. We know. So being known as the person that does this thing, right, whatever that thing happens to be, is incredibly helpful, because like the way that I put it to our small businesses, like if I'm putting on my entrepreneur hat, the way that I talk to people about this is as such. If I need to make $100,000 a year, I really only actually need 1,000 people to pay me $100 a year. It's a very attainable goal. It's going to take some work, but you can get there pretty fairly quickly, actually, if done right. So the easiest way to do that is to get those 1,000 people to know you for one particular thing, because it's going to be a lot harder to get, you know, 50 people that know you for the person that shoots great flower photos and 50 people that know you for shooting great wedding stuff. Like when you start scattershotting like that, no one really actually knows what you're great at. And that makes it really hard for someone to come and say, I know this guy, he does that. And he's the best at it. A good art director and a creative director will say, yeah, I see that you normally, in my case, I see you normally shoot fitness. But what do you think about going and doing this month-long documentary? Like, I got flown all over the world to do a documentary on just like businesses that were being innovative with technology. Has nothing to do with what my bread and butter was. But I built that relationship up with that client to the point where they understood that any job they put in front of me was going to get knocked out of the park to the best of my abilities. Because what people, at least, I speak so much about the advertising world because that's really where I come from. But you know, I think that what people are looking for is someone's ability to like really weave a narrative, to really be able to say something with the work. And if you can show that within your own specialty, they will understand that it translates to everything else. You mentioned that Imprisoned series on my site. For the record, all of the work on that site has got to be like at least 7 years old at this point, because right. I tried to update it and my Mac just died. So I haven't even gotten that hard drive.
Well, it still holds up, just so you know. Yeah, right.
Thank you very much. It needs to hold up. But that Imprisoned series, I got a job from that series of a person wanting me to do real estate headshots for her whole team. And I was like, what?
Yeah,
like,
right.
Do you want me to make everyone look like a sad gorilla? Right. That's the impression I'm getting right now. But no, they just wanted clean on white studio headshots. I couldn't tell you how that worked out, but I do understand that she found me from everyone else in fitness, and she hired me because of what I was saying through that series. Mm-hmm. The reason that the style shifts is because the way that I approach my craft is that everything is a means to an end. If I have something sad and somber to say, the style is going to reflect that.
Sure.
If I have, you know, a physique that needs to be shown off, the lighting is going to be crisp. Everything is going to have contrast. Every vein's going to pop, because I know that that's what those people value. I know that that's what the sponsors that they're seeking value. And I mean, let's just be even simpler about it. If I looked like that, what would I want to see in myself in that shot? I wouldn't put all of that work in to have someone take a photograph of me that doesn't show it off in the best way possible. And so that's where the style comes from. I actually don't know how to define my own style. And I think that that's probably the case for a lot of photographers. I hear people say that I can spot your photos a mile away, David. And my question is always, what are you seeing? Because I don't know. What I do know is that I make what looks good to me. And I've worked very hard to make sure that the clients that I keep are the ones that agree with me, the ones that like what I do, and that we can enter even into like a collaborative environment with, where we're both determining the style because it's about them. It's not about me. The personal work is because I have something to say. Like, both of those series are very, very personal to me. So they have a much, much different feel that is intended, hopefully, whether or not it's successful, I don't know, but they're intended to bring a bit of sadness and a bit of introspection to the situation, because I think that the subject matter needs that. Make sense?
Oh, absolutely. And it definitely comes through, because it's like, I mean, especially because the way you find them on the website, where they're juxtaposed against some of that other work. So, I mean, it totally makes sense to me. I mean, they are very expressive. I mean, that's why I was like, are these shot on film? You know, I mean, they have kind of that raw look about them, and I wasn't sure how old they were, but no, I think it's, I think it totally makes sense. And I, you know, the thing that I always like to explore with this is like, is style, is it having a defined style, especially for a, you know, a quote unquote, not professional photographer, that important? You know, I try to find themes in my own photography, and just what is it? And it's funny, because I have had just a few examples of where I've been out shooting something and I'm like, well, is this going to look like, you know, my, is this like things that have been coming out of me lately? And then I realized that the more I think about it, the less it does. You know, the more I think about it, the less it actually looks like something that a photo that I would enjoy. So what I've been trying to do is just really let it go. And there's some certain compositional things that I like to do, and it's just because they kind of, I just like them. I just like the way that they look, and that's all there is to it. So I just shoot those pictures because I've gotten to the point where it's like, okay, I do care what other people think, but again, in most cases, you know, for me, I'm not being paid to do this. It is important that I get photos that do have some sincerity to them, some expression to them, because especially when I'm taking photos, when I'm on the clock, you know, those photos are going to be hopefully used to move forward our mission. I mean, we're environmentalists. We manage a conservation nonprofit organization, and it's, the truth of it is, though, is that I do get to shoot for work all the time, and I just realize that it has to be real, it has to be sincere, and it has to kind of just come from my heart. And the only way for me to really get those pictures is to not think about it at all.
We have a core group of people that during the pandemic, we just at this store, I think other stores are doing it, but I can only really speak to ours. Mm-hmm. We started doing just like a small group photo share, and because I love teaching, I decided that I would start trying to add value to this by giving people, you know, some understanding of compositional. I call them compositional tactics, because I don't really think like rules of composition is fair. Like, they're right. A means to an end, and there Agreed. Are no rules. So if you want to put something clean to the left of the photo where like half of the person, go for it, man. It does, like, you do you. Mm-hmm. And I think that like, There's so many, it's almost like people think that photography is full of people that just demand that everything be a certain way because some old master said that it had to be, or because, right, like, it's not true. But it is very valuable to look at those people that have gone before us and kind of stand on their shoulders and try and mimic what they did, because I think that's the way that voice and style shows up. You know, you start mimicking the things that you love and that you really, that speak to you. Mm-hmm. And after a while of mimicking several photographers, eventually, just like any other skill set, when you're out in the moment, those things show up for you. Mm-hmm. The skills that you learned from mimicking the other masters, they're in your back pocket. And all of a sudden, a person will find themselves using them without thinking. They'll find themselves gravitating towards a specific style of stuff. In fact, since I want to make sure that I say this, since it just occurred to me, one of the best bits of portfolio advice I ever got, and because I just thought of this, I can't remember who said it, but what she said was, take 20, let's call it 20 to 30, or whatever, just images that you wish you had shot, right? And print them all out if you need to print them all out. It's really good if you do this as a physical practice, but you get them all printed out and you just throw them on the floor and arrange them in like a grid. And you look at that from kind of a bird's eye view. And the question to be asking is, what is similar here? Mm-hmm. What's the common thread between all of these? For me, when I did this practice, it was minimalistic, simple work. Not a lot of clutter. Beautiful lighting, but uncomplicated. And when I realized that, I was like, oh yeah, like that's my personality. I like simplicity. I like the zen of things in their most minimal state. And so I started to lean into that. I don't use complicated lighting setups unless I absolutely have to. I don't use complicated, you know, methods of exposure. I just shoot what feels right. And I tried to leave all the clutter and all of the rest of the stuff aside. But I learned that by analyzing other work and then asking myself what it was that I liked so much about this work. It changed the way that I looked at everything because it took me out of this place of, what you call it, just like flailing around, mm-hmm. maybe just sort yeah. of this like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't really know where I'm going, but let me just try something and let's see what sticks. And let me govern what I decide to do by the likes that I get on social media. And I'll let that drive and on and on and on. And it never stops. But the second that I started to like look inward and say, all right, what's David about? My work took on a whole different shape.
That makes a lot of sense. I mean, I've been having a lot of self-reflection on this topic, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, and some of these pictures that I've taken for others that we have talked about, I feel like I haven't really been myself or been honest with myself as an artist when I'm taking those pictures. I'm like, why did they want me to take pictures here in the first place? You know, they've yeah. seen the stuff that I've done before. It's like, a lot of the things that I really like in photography, I usually like pretty dark photos. I like spot metering and protecting highlights and having things be pretty dark. I mean, I like old black and white photos, even if I'm using color, which I'm primarily shooting in color now all the time. I still like that style. I like, you know, high contrast. I like pretty dark photos. I like histograms that are way over on the left. And I've been not really doing that. I've been, you know, all right, I'm going to use more evaluative metering. I'm going to make sure that this is right. And, you know, and I'm like, these pictures are okay. They're accurate. They're exposed well, all of that, but they just don't speak to me so much. So, you
man,
know,
that's about know. The worst way that I would ever imagine hearing my work described as accurate.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, and I mean, that's coming from myself looking at them. And there's a few in there that I like, but it's funny because I was working hard to get those pictures. It's like you said, you know, you're covering it from every angle. Like that's kind of the first word that when I started looking at them and downloading them, and I was like, the content is, it's pretty cool. Like I got access, I'm taking pictures. The senator is 5 feet away from me. This is really neat. But I looked at them, I said, how would I describe these pictures? And I thought, accurate, you know, boy, these pictures are accurate. And I think it came from, I think that thought occurred to me again, going back to this book I'm reading right now with about Richard Avedon. He said something along the lines of, what was it? Something like all photographs are accurate, but very few of them are the truth. And I was yeah. like, oh, that's pretty good. And so this word accurate keeps popping in my head where I'm just like, okay, I need to let that go. I mean, I know that my photographs are going to be accurate. I mean, they're photographs. They can't,
right.
it's hard,
they
it's hard to
be.
Make them lie that, you know, by the very nature of the medium. But you know, I need to kind of let my, you know, let my feelings interfere a little bit, you know, say like, all right, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm going to shoot this. I'm going to get all these different angles. I'm going to just make these like colorful and well exposed, but I need to let my own sort of creativity interfere and not be afraid to take those pictures, because honestly, what's the worst that can happen? They don't like them. It doesn't matter. They weren't paying me to be there. They asked me to be there, but I'm not getting paid. I'm a volunteer. And so I'm just like, hey, well, you know, this, you get what you pay for.
Well, I think too, you know, that if there's another difference between a professional and an amateur, it's that being selective about what you show. And that can, I think, be a little crippling too. Like it can sure. sort of paralyze you if you're not careful. But I think it's really important to remember that volume-wise, there were years where I was shooting 100 to 200,000 photos a year, if not more. Mm-hmm. And let's not even talk about the storage nightmare that is, but yeah. like the percentage of images that I showed publicly of those, right? It might have been like 1%.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
Otherwise, you muddy the waters and people get confused. And like, you want to show your best stuff. Then you got to figure out what your best stuff is. It's sort of always a moving target. I think there's this misconception that like a professional just never takes a bad photo.
That's definitely not the case. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I routinely take bad photos. I think yeah. it's good to just get them out of the way. Like, especially in like brainstorming stuff. I like to tell people like, just everything goes. Say it even if it's stupid. We got to get that out so the good stuff has room to play around. And it's critical.
Yeah, I mean, photography is definitely like that. I mean, I like books of contact sheets just for that reason. Yeah, Magnum had a book called Contact Sheets or Contact, and it was just like, 400 pages of contact sheets of all the most famous photos that ever came out of that agency. It's the contact sheets. So, you think of any of the most famous, iconic, almost cliche photos you can think of, like Afghan Girl. Look at all the other slides from that roll of Kodachrome, and like half of them, she's like doing this and she's looking over here and she's slightly out of focus in this one. And, then all of a sudden, and you're looking along, and then one of them, she looks right at the camera and like, that's the picture. And of course that's the picture. I mean, it's an iconic picture that's been reprinted millions of times, but there's also a whole bunch of garbage in that roll. I mean, they're not garbage, but you know what I mean? They're not the photo for sure.
They're not going to make the cut.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, when I would do, let's hypothetically say I would shoot, an hour long portrait session with somebody. I would probably take 400 or 500 photos during that hour, but I know that I'm going to pick 10. They don't know that I'm going to pick 10. So a lot of that arbitrary clicking is for them to make them feel like, oh, there's just a bunch of stuff going on. And I have my own paparazzi here right now. But for me, the internal process is I'm waiting for the one.
Yeah.
I'm waiting for that moment where the guard drops and I see you for who you are, and I'm going to get that. Everything else is superfluous, right? Like I think the more experienced you get in photography, a couple things change. Like you start waiting and anticipating that moment. You start playing with contrast more than subject. Like things shift in ways that I think the novice or even the amateur photographer don't really fully accept as like, it's not like sorcery. We don't just hit a certain level and all of a sudden everything is easy peasy. It doesn't work that way.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And it's interesting because I think of photography, at least in my life, as an also, it's not an everything. It's not the way that I earn my living, but it's important to the way that I earn my living. Not the way that I live my day-to-day life, but it's important to the way that I remember it. It's not the way that I experience my community, but it's important to the way that I, express to others how I feel about my community. And so it's interesting because like that will, I have one of those mentalities that kind of takes me from hobby to hobby or interest to interest, but photography is always there. My wife will tell you, it's like, that's the one thing that has stuck with me for our 20 plus years together. Like I've been photographing for over 25 years now. And, certainly the volume of it ebbs and flows, but I've always had a decent camera. I've always had that in my head. And I, even looking way back at when photography wasn't like a really elevated part of my life, my old job, photography was nowhere near it. So it just wasn't, the volume of work wasn't there. It was all hobby photography at that point, or hobby photography. And now I just take it more seriously because it's like, I've integrated it. I've also like done that on purpose. Like I've had the opportunity to integrate it and elevate the importance of it in my work because of just the nature of the work that I do and the fact that I'm the boss where I work. So nobody's going to tell me otherwise. But
it does help.
It does help. It definitely helps. But, I don't know. I don't think I'll ever get bored of it because it is a constant struggle. I don't even think of it as a struggle. I think of it as a constant, like it's a joy. It's a joy to make mistakes and realize what you've done or to see how you could have made it better. And, one educator that I worked with recently, he just talked about how photography is just all about open-heartedness and just letting stuff in and making yourself vulnerable and being okay with the growth process and building those relationships and getting closer to your subjects. And that's where a lot of the magic happens. So I don't know. I think we covered a heck of a lot here. And I really enjoyed this conversation. This was fantastic.
Me too, man. Thank you for having me.
No. And, I think I'm going to wrap it up there. We've got about an hour and a half here in the can, so that's good. That's plenty. We're going to break this baby up into two episodes for everyone as they're hearing this. This will be at the tail end of episode two. So so good. We've got a few in the can here. If you are a listener to this podcast, it's very likely that you are interested in Leica cameras. And I can't tell you of too many other high quality customer service experiences I've ever had in my life that would rival David at the Leica DC store. So David, thanks so much for the role that you have played in my personal sort of journey and gear struggle lately. It's great. You're like the, you're just an email eye psychiatry session away for me to get through the crippling doubt of dealing with equipment. So thanks very much for everything that you've done for me. I certainly appreciate it.
Yeah, man, it's been my pleasure. I've really enjoyed, you know, getting to hear your story and be able to help too. Like, my only goal is to just like make creativity more accessible to people, whatever that takes.
That was awesome. I really enjoyed that. And I've got a couple of the great interviews in the can that are going to be rolling out over the next few weeks. So please stay tuned for those. And again, like I mentioned before the interview, I'm going to kick out another straight out of camera episode where I just kind of rant and rave direct without a whole lot of editing, without a whole lot of preparation, just about some of my thoughts about the state of affairs and Leica cameras and creativity and photography and anything else that might be going on in my life. So this podcast has been a wonderful opportunity for me to meet people. So I hope that you take to heart that, you know, I really do invite you to reach out to me. I've spoken with dozens of you over email and over Facebook and Instagram Messenger. Instagram Messenger is probably my favorite method there. So please follow me on Instagram at ZG Brannigan, or alternatively, jump on my black and white page, which is all there in black and white, or preferably follow both. So I'm not a huge Instagram guy. I've got relatively small followings there, but it's an excellent vehicle to communicate with you, the listeners. So yeah, please feel free to do that and send me a message if I don't get it right away. And if we're not connected on Instagram, it goes into another folder and I have to kind of look that up and authorize access for that. So, but don't hesitate. And you know, but if it takes me a week or so to get back with you, don't worry. I read everything and I love hearing from you. You can find all my contact information in the description of this episode. Again, that's at ZG Brannigan, ZGBRANIGAN. Or you can just go to my website, ZacharyBrannigan.com, and you can find information about this podcast. You can find a lot of my images and portfolio stuff, publications, and you can also find links to my socials and email and all that stuff. So I would love to hear from you. And yeah, I don't know. That's about it. We'll have another episode coming down the pipeline soon. Thanks a lot. And hey, Merry Christmas. Stay safe. I hope you're well, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care.